If you ever have an opportunity to travel inside a hot air balloon, I don't mean in the basket suspended from a hot air balloon. No. And I don't mean in one of those little spaceships that the millionaire balloonists use. Little pod thing. Looks like something that got evacuated from something on Star Trek. And they say, I'm going to break the world record for sitting in a portable luxury apartment suspended from a balloon. I go around the world at great speed. Richard Branson going from America or somewhere to London. For some reason, he lost altitude over Northern Ireland, kind of bounced off the ground, but then he took off again and managed to get to England without fully landing. This farmer thought, why is this billionaire bouncing off my field? Probably caused an earthquake without even knowing it. Said, oh, hello, I'm not coming in to land, I'm just going to bounce here. And please don't tell the people from the Book of Records about this, because I'm supposed to be staying in the air until I get to the British mainland, as we British people call it. I'm not saying we British people as in me, I'm not British. The point is, maybe he'd heard of the Giant's Causeway in the north of this island. I believe it's some sort of rock layout beside the sea that looks like stepping stones that a giant would use to get somewhere. Maybe he thought of those and he thought, oh, if I just use Ireland as a stepping stone, I won't be landing there, I'll just be bouncing. As long as I don't put both feet down, then that's fine. I just put down one foot. What he failed to realise is that a balloon doesn't have 2 feet. And I know it's just an analogy, but in this analogy, if you're going to say it's like a joint using a stepping stone, I'm not putting both feet down, I'm just putting one. You are putting, well, you only have 1 foot to put down, so it'd be better to say that the balloon is like a one-legged joint. If you're a one-legged joint hopping along and using Ireland as a stepping stone, it's not unreasonable to say that if you bounce off the island here, you're not putting both feet down because you only have 1 foot. So that's a copper-tight argument. I assume he put that to the Guinness Book of Records people. You may not be familiar with Norris McGruffer and his brother who nobody ever hears about until they grow up. There was a children's television program called Record Breakers. They used to bring on this fella, Norris McGruffer, every week, and they'd have some fun record-breaking attempts that they'd show on the show, and he'd say stuff. If you watch this as I did in the 1990s, you were blissfully unaware that about 20 years before, there were two McGruffer brothers on it. They were twins. And were both, I don't know if they were job sharing or they took turns like the baby on Full House. Is it Full House? Yes, the baby on Full House is played by twins. So they don't have to do too much work because it's a toddler to share the work. A record-breaking thing. I presume it was a bit like that. There were two McGruffer brothers. There was Norris McGruffer, who remained on the show until it ended. It turns out in the 70s and 80s, he had a brother who was murdered, which was absolutely fucking terrible. What was even more terrible about it was because there was a children's television program. If you had missed that season, that arc of the show, in the 70s, you were just coming along to it in the 90s, as I was. He didn't even know that 18 seasons ago, one of the main people on this show had been murdered, which I only found out about quite recently, here in 2025. But they didn't keep going on about it, because it was a children's show. I suppose that's understandable. I watched it in the 90s. There was no mention of it at all. No mention that this fella had a brother who was murdered. I assume he was gunned down on the show. I'm being ridiculous, obviously, but for all I knew, he could have been gunned down in season 5, maybe 15 years before I got into it. Nobody mentioned it. There was no backstory mentioned at all. But while I was watching it, the presenter, Roy Castle, got cancer. They showed him losing his hair and having all the sickness thing, and then one day they said, oh, he's dead. He's dead now. This is terrible. He's dead. They said, let's celebrate his life. And he had quite a reasonably interesting life. He'd been for one thing, he'd been a children's television presenter. For another thing, he'd been some sort of variety show act, tap dancing and telling jokes and singing. Funny you should mention Breaking Bad. This fella pretty much died on air on a children's television program of cancer. Breaking Bad, unlike Record Breakers, was a scripted television program about the chemistry teacher dying of cancer and decided to become a drugs baron so he could leave something for his family. On Record Breakers, Roy Castle told all the children watching it that he had cancer. If I remember rightly, we got to see him lose all his hair. Still going around saying, oh yes, I've got this cancer. It's great. It's absolutely great. Norris McGuire, you know all about death, don't you? For reasons which we're not going to go into, but any of the older kids who have seen the early seasons of this show will know about it. Norris, tell me all about records in the Guinness Book of Records regarding death. Preferably the ones about avoiding it. But then what are the ones about avoiding it? Very upbeat fella, Roy Castle. Anyway, he died. Upon a time, there was a dog. And this dog, he was sitting in his kennel one day. His kennel was at the side of the house, facing out through a side gate onto the road, so any passing prowler could see that there was a dog there who appeared to be keeping watch. Its owners had set it up that way in the hope that he would function as a security dog of some sort, even if he was just sitting there. So this dog was looking out through the gates, like someone who spends their whole life in prison. They only see the world through bars, so you only see about half of it. If you're in prison, now I don't know about you, I've never been to prison, but when you're in prison, they put you in a cell, they put you in cell block H or cell block Q or cell block F or cell block 5 or perhaps in more imaginative prisons, they say, oh, you're going to Slytherin, or maybe they call them by colours, they say, you're going to cell block Orange. Why did they announce this and tell them to the prisoner in advance? I don't know. Why do you need to know what cell block you're going to? I presume you're going to be escorted there. They're not going to just say, here's your keys. Check out is 11 o'clock in the morning on whatever date you're released. I know you don't have a release date yet. But when you're ready to check out, when you have your release date, you need to be out by 11 a.m. Unless we don't let you out, I suppose. I suppose you don't really have much control over that. If that happens, make sure we don't bill you for the extra day if it's through no fault of your own that you're kept in. Wait, are you billed for stuff in prison? I presume you are. You must be billed somehow, surely. Phone calls and use of the library. I presume you have to pay for the library. Surely to God you have to pay for the library. The library in a prison is a very, 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 very big deal, I have to assume. Because you don't have your smartphone, you don't have your podcasts, except from what I understand, if you're in prison, you get maybe an hour a week on the computer, and that's when you get to listen to podcasts, if you're lucky. If there's somewhere you can plug in your headphones set, and the headphones haven't been bullied out of you by some gang member who's said, give me everything you have and I'll protect you from being beaten up in this godforsaken hellhole. Is that headphones? Give me those. And of course you'll say to that, you say, do you have anything to plug them into? This is a pair of headphones. Because this prisoner you're talking to has probably been in there for 25 years. Has no idea what a pair of headphones is. It just knows that it seems to keep people entertained or occupied, or can be traded for drugs, illicit drugs, not listed ones. They see the new prisoner with these headphones and they say, oh yes, I'll take them off you in return for preventing you from being beaten up or something. And you say, fair enough, but what are you going to do with them? You don't have anything to plug them into, a phone or a Walkman. You will eventually figure out that the headphones need to be connected to some device for them to be of any value. You probably end up then getting a smartphone sneaked into you somehow, and you find out there's no headphone sockets anymore. So you have this pair of headphones, you risk everything having some brand new smartphone sneaked into you somehow, and then you try and plug one into the other and you realise, wait a minute, where's the hole? There used to be a hole in things that you plug a headphone into, from what I understand from my research, from my book reading in the library. I got out a book about modern technology. It was a book from the 1970s about the future. And it says, in the future, there's going to be these things, outside of prisons anyway, there's going to be these things where you plug them into your ears and you can listen to stuff all day to your heart's content, as long as you're not in prison. There'll be a hole in it where you plug them in and you connect them to your head. Shoot it. What in the name of Christ is that background? Someone's using a very noisy power tool. I used to think, why are my neighbours always using these very, very noisy tools that sound to me like a chainsaw? I found out many years later that what they're using is usually just a thing for spraying water. Did you point at something to wash it? They're just washing a stain off their patio. Well, it sounds like they're chopping someone's head off with a chainsaw. We had a water issue in this house a few days ago. There was a problem with a lavatory. In fact, the lavatory in the ensuite of this room where I'm sitting at the moment basically exploded in my face. There is somewhat of an emergency. This room started to flood. I eventually managed to suspend it. It's dry now. This room is dry now, don't worry. In fact, so confident am I in my drying out of this room that I'm wearing no shoes at the moment. In fact, I've been absent-mindedly removing my sock from my right foot. When I got to the word absent-mindedly just now, I had the sock half off my foot. And as I said, I removed it completely. I removed it using my other hand. So now I've got the sock on my left hand, like the fucking glove puppet or something. That's a bit weird, isn't it? It's a bit weird. It reminds me of my early childhood. When I was about 4 years of age, I was sent to play school. One of the activities involved making a horse, supposedly. They told us, oh, you can make a horse and play on it. You got a sock and they sewed a couple of buttons to it and that became the horse's head. If it went out like that, I hope the authorities would find out about it. The horses would be immediately taken away from you and be sent to court. Because if your horse looks like that, you're not feeding it very well. In fact, that would explain. When you're riding one of those imaginary toy horses using a broom handle and a sock, usually you don't sit on it at all. You kind of hold a diagonal between your legs. You kind of pretend you're sitting on it, but you don't put your weight on it at all. And that's realistic, because if a horse was that thin in real life, you would not put your weight on it because it would break straight away. In fact, a real horse who was that thin would probably break more easily than the one that's made from a broom handle. Sit on a broom handle somewhat and it wouldn't immediately break. A horse who was that thin, well, there's more to break, I suppose. There's all these ribs, there's the whole spine and everything. And then there's their legs that are trying to hold her up. I suppose there's that. Although, now I think about it, the broom handle, that doesn't have legs holding it up. The only thing holding that up would be the bottom end of the broom handle, which represents the tail and the back of the torso. But if you're resting that on the ground, that's holding the full weight of the pole, the broom handle thing. In the case of a real horse that was like that, the tail and the back of the horse wouldn't be holding all its weight. It'll be balanced between the four legs. So that's not as realistic as I imagined it was in the first place. So there's that. I suppose if you're in prison, that sort of thing seems rather more entertaining than it does otherwise. I know this was about an activity in my play school when I was 4 or 5. But you're in prison. The highlight of your day is going to the library or maybe spending 10 minutes on the computer or walking around the yard, bouncing a ball against the wall for a few minutes. If you've come across a broom handle with a sock on it, that's going to be the highlight of your week. Well, thank Christ, I get to do an activity that's slightly different from the... Well, it's slightly different if you haven't been doing it every day. Unfortunately, what's more likely to happen, if you do happen to get your hands on the sweeping brush and the sock in there, you're going to be wearing the sock all day, every day. You're going to be using the sweeping brush at least a couple of hours a day. Presumably, you've managed to get your hands on the sweeping brush because you got a job sweeping the floors. So you'll be using that sweeping brush a lot. So when you decide to play with it and use it as an imaginary horse, that's going to be a bit of a busman's holiday. It's not going to be as exciting as you'd hoped. You're going to go, oh, this isn't a horse. This is just a sweeping brush I use for my work. I probably get 20 cents a week for this, because you're not really allowed to have proper jobs in a jail. I noticed you Americans, you go on about prison and you go on about jail like they're different things. I think the idea is if you're arrested and you're thrown in a place overnight, that's jail. And prison is where you go when they said, oh, you've been convicted and you're going down. You're going down, and then you go down and then they put you in prison. But then you talk about your county jails. You have that song. How's it going now? Oh, the something, something at the local county jail, the warden, something, something, something. And that song implies that the people in there are not just in there for the night being processed until they're let out on bail. I can't remember what stuff happens in the song, but it's a local county jail. Now, a county, where I come from at least, is a place that takes about an hour to drive across. So if you're arrested somewhere, they're not going to bring everyone to the jail who's just arrested and being booked, are they? No. They go to their local police station, be kept there for a few hours and then sent home on bail, if that's what's happening. Is that well? Maybe not. Maybe I'm naive about these things. I don't know. I'll admit I've never been arrested. I'll admit to that. I'll come clean and admit I've never in my life been arrested or accused of a crime or suspected of a crime or committed a crime. I'll admit I'm not a criminal. So there, you dragged that out of me. Are you happy now? You probably are. Are you happy now? You should be. You're listening to a nonsense humor podcast. You should be happy. There's no reason you shouldn't be happy. If you're not happy listening to this, maybe you're less happy than usual because you're hearing me sipping on this water. I've got needles in my throat. I hadn't realized it before I started recording, but there seems to be needles in my throat and they're causing a thing. And hardly warrants putting me in jail, does it? No. They used to have these airships. A few young people. You're thinking, airship, that sounds like nonsense. You're clearly making that up. A ship in the air, no. Ships go either in the sea or in space. There's no in between. There's no such thing as an airship. You can have a ship on the surface of some water, like on the sea. You can have a ship there, like the Titanic or something. Or you can have a spaceship, which don't exist yet, unless there are aliens who have them. But they exist in fiction, these huge spaceships. So you can have those. There are two very different animals, the spaceship and the sea ship, and there's no in-between. They might be somehow connected in terms of terminology, because they have a captain and they have a port and stern maybe and stuff like that. But they're very different. And you couldn't transport a sea ship into space. You wouldn't go, oh, here's a sea ship. It's time for it to spend some time in space. You wouldn't do that. It's not like one of those duck tours. They bring tourists around on this thing. It's kind of like a bus, but it doubles as a boat. So they drive it down a ramp into some pond in a city park or go along a river or a canal and then they go back onto the road and they give them a tour around the tourist attractions in a city. And that's because a bus and a small boat that carries 10 or 20 passengers are close enough, are comparable. You can have one vehicle that does the boat, but you wouldn't have one vehicle that does both space and sea. Now you're thinking maybe you could, because Star Trek, they've had spaceships. They can survive the horrors of space, free to Christ, they can survive floating in the sea for a while. Well, that's true, but the problem is, getting from space to the sea and from the sea to space, because in between sea and space, there's an area that's filled with something called air. And an airship is not a thing. That's what you're thinking anyway. You're thinking an airship is not a thing. There's a sea ship and there's a spaceship. If space ended at the surface of the sea, if space and water met at the surface of the sea, perhaps on the horizon, I don't know how would that work. But if space went all the way down to Earth, down to the surface of the Earth, that would be the equivalent of the ramp that doctors use. You could drive the spaceship into the water or drive the sea ship into space. But no, you have a buffer called air, the atmosphere. And there's no such thing as a ship that can float in the atmosphere, in the air. And there's no such thing as a spaceship that can... Oh, maybe there is. That's what you see. You don't know. You're a young person. You've never heard of airships. Now, I'm relatively young too. I wasn't around when there were airships. But there were airships. I read about them. They had these huge airships that looked like balloons. And basically it was a giant bag of air, but inside I've read about them, but they never tell you about how the insides work. Because they're too busy showing you that horrible 30 seconds where one of them caught fire and everything just disintegrated. Everyone died and disintegrated in the space of half a minute. They never show you what was actually inside the airship. When you see stuff about the Titanic, they spend plenty of time showing you, here's where all the rich people lived, here's their quarters, the restaurants, the decks, and about where the poor people lived. They showed you plenty of stuff about that, they showed you the band. But you read all this stuff about airships, they never show you what went on inside airship on a normal voyage before everything went on fire. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I should look into it more. I haven't watched any documentaries about airships. I've just read a book. I don't know. Anyway, suffice to say, airships. There were airships and they did fly through the air from one place to the other. And there was like a giant balloon. Except, again, I don't know how they worked. Was there air inside the balloon? There must have been, because you have to breathe. Was inside like a wooden hotel or something? They don't tell you these things. For all I know, the inside could have been just a big bag of air and everyone was floating around in it. And there was no seating or bars or things like that. I have no idea. No idea what the inside of an airship was like. No idea. That's a failing on behalf of the media. There are TV channels you can turn on any time of day or night now. You instantly see a program about Hitler. You can't see what was inside that airship that burned down. That's a bit weird to me. Is it weird to you? You're probably thinking, yes, it's weird to me too, but not in the way that you think it is. Well, that's fine. That's fine. Excuse me. Excuse me for having an original thought about something that I haven't thought about too much. I haven't investigated. I'm not a detective. I don't go around investigating these things. I'm just surprised with the amount of television I've watched in my life that I've never seen the inside of an airship. That seems a bit odd. What is the layout of the inside of an airship? Do they have a section where the pilot sits? And where is it? Because an airship is round, isn't it? Well, no, it's more kind of egg-shaped, but it's not an upright egg. It's an egg on its side, wherever a 3D oval shape is. Is that an orville? Maybe it is. I don't know what an orville is, but they made that thing that's like Star Trek called the Orville, and they have a weird-shaped ship. Is that the shape of an orville? Maybe it is. In my day, the orville was a very, very, very obnoxious children's ventriloquist dummy. And then, of course, there's the horizon. Now, if you're on a boat on the surface of the sea, you think, oh, look, that's the horizon. That's where the sea meets the sky. So if this was a flying boat, I could just make my way along to the horizon. Wouldn't even need a runway. Just get to the horizon and then I'm in the sky. I presume that's how it works. If you wanted to make the transition from sea ship to spaceship, you couldn't do that because the horizon doesn't meet space. the sky is in the way. You go along to the horizon and you try to get into space from there. No, you can't make it because you'd have to jump across all this sky. There's several kilometers of sky between the surface of the sea and the beginning of space. You have to get across that. It's like when you're climbing Mount Everest, crossing the glacier, the bottom part. There's all these terrifying holes and gaps and cracks in the glacier that you can fall into. They put these ladders across them and you walk across the ladder. You can make the transition. You can't put a ladder from the sea into space. Now, you can't put a ladder from the sea into the sky either, even at the horizon. You get to the horizon where the sea meets the sky, and you think, oh, I'll just get into the sky now. You expect there to be seamless transition. Well, maybe you don't, I do. The sky meets water at the horizon. There's no scope for putting a ladder there because there's no gap to put the ladder across. If you're climbing Mount Everest, you put the ladder across the crevice. You get from one side of the crevice to the other, crawling across this terrifying ladder. Well, no, you get to the horizon, you go from the sea into the sky. You can't use a ladder for that. Yes, you would think because there's no gap, you could just get into the sky there by just walking. But that doesn't work either. There's no gap at all, yet you can't just walk into the sky. Why not? Why not? I'll tell you why not. It's because the sky is ridiculous because of gravity. There's gravity here on the ground. There's no gravity in the sky. Oh, wait, is that right? No, there is gravity in the sky. Yes, the problem isn't bollocks. Can you imagine that the horizon meets directly with space? And let's pretend the sky isn't there. No atmosphere. Space comes all the way down to the surface of the sea and the earth. Which it does at night, in the way. But it doesn't really. That's just an optical illusion. The atmosphere is still there. It just looks like the space comes right down to the surface. But let's suppose for a moment that space really, 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 really did meet the surface of the earth. You'd be walking along the surface and you go, oh, I think I'll go into space now. And you just go, oh, look, there's space. It's right on the surface. You just take one big step for mankind by literally just walking into space. The surface of the earth is a kind of platform to stand on, but you're in space. And of course, you space nerds are thinking, the earth is in space already, you fucking idiot. We're whizzing through space at a great speed. We're flying through space at millions of miles a year. We're taking grand trips around the sun every 365 days, except leap years. We're rotating at a great speed. Well, that's just all going round in circles. We're not really going anywhere. We're going nowhere. We're going nowhere and we're going nowhere fast. And there's a reason that going nowhere fast expression exists. It's because it's bollocks. Going nowhere fast gets you nowhere. You can go as fast as you want, you still get nowhere. You can go as slow as you want, you still get nowhere as well. You might even think, oh, at least if I go slowly and take my time, I can enjoy the scenery and still get nowhere eventually. Well, no, you won't get nowhere eventually. You literally get to nowhere. Wait a minute. I've just thought of a new concept. Go nowhere fast and still you get there sooner, but you still don't get there. It's nowhere. You got nowhere. If you go nowhere slowly, I don't know. It just seems quite clever to me when I first thought it up. It doesn't now. Anyway, that's the problem with the space thing. The space doesn't really come down to meet the surface of the earth. You have the atmosphere in the way, or the sky. Ironically, if the sky wasn't there, you could just step into space and bypass the sky. But then where would you be? You'd be in the vacuum of space. There'd be no air. You need the air. The air is important. Unless you're incoming from space, there's no air and you're going to Earth. And you think, oh, yes, I've heard about this place. They breathe air here. Well, I have no use for that, so I don't need to worry about that. Oh, wait, but doesn't that mean you drown in air then? Because we don't breathe water, but if we go in down where the fishes are, we drown. And if the fishes come up into the air for too long, they drown. So if you're traveling to Earth through space from a magical world somewhere where people don't need oxygen. You turn up here in our atmosphere, they presumably drown in that. I suppose I'm making a lot of assumptions about how alien physiology works, I suppose. But you have to make assumptions sometimes. I can't just call them up and say, hello, would you mind telling me how your breathing works and how your breathing will work when you arrive here? For one thing, they don't even know, probably. They've never been here. They don't know how it works. It's as much a mystery to them as it is to us. They're on a voyage of exploration. I suppose it would make sense to compare notes before they arrive, though. Maybe we can help them with that. Or inhibit them, if we deem that appropriate.
Two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats says, a pack of your finest cigarettes, please. If you don't mind. Have you not keeping them aside for someone important? Some visiting dignitary or something? Some visiting dignitary who has to keep up their reputation and their image and not be seen smoking the cheaper cigarettes they get to, you have to keep them. I could understand that. I could well understand. Well, I wouldn't understand the visiting dignitary for demanding that. I could understand you, a publican, agreeing to humour that, because these people are coming round, they're bringing a lot of attention to your bar, they're bringing this visiting dignitary. Perhaps he's a US president, perhaps a pope, perhaps a Coptic pope or something in some other religion, or perhaps some retired pope. I don't think there's a retired pope at the moment, is there? No. There's no longer a situation whereby there are two living popes in the Roman Catholic Church, one of whom is retired. No, instead we just have a pope who's not very well, and we're constantly being reminded that when he dies we get one more pope and then that's the end of the world according to some secret thing. But no, I could imagine if you're a Republican and someone, maybe they're from the Secret Service or the KGB or someone, they come up to you and say, hello, we're going to have this dignitary visiting you. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like you to set aside a pack of your best brand of cigarettes for him, just to keep up appearances, because he needs to look good. I'm sure you won't mind, because we're bringing all this attention to your pub. And you'll quite rightly say, oh, absolutely not, no problem at all, no problem at all. And they'll say, now, of course, you and I know that it doesn't actually have to be the best brand of cigarettes, it just has to be the brand of cigarettes that the pundits are impressed by. So what one would that be? Can you advise, please? And that puts the publican in a difficult situation. Because the publican thinks, wait a minute, I'm prescribing the brand of cigarettes for this visiting dignitary now. The visiting dignitary, if he's a smoker, presumably he already has his preferences. I'm supposed to prescribe one for him that he might not like, that we're just putting out for branding. That's a bit much. What if he doesn't like it and he takes that out on me? What if he shoots me dead or something? Well, I wouldn't do that. Visiting dignitaries, when they're being set up for a photo opportunity like that in another country, they don't generally shoot people dead who are there to... No, probably not, no. There was that fella in America. Very tragically, there was a local government fella in some city. I think he was in charge of the finances in the city or something like that. He called a press conference over some scandal, handed out all the printed statements, and then mumbled something about, if you're of a delicate disposition, you mightn't want to see this. Don't search for it, but there was a time when you could see this video online. You don't want to see it. Ditto Saddam Hussein's execution. You don't want to see that either. What else do you not want to see? No, I can't think of anything else. Everything else is fine. Watch everything else. It's fine. In fact, go to intoyourhead.ie/shorts and subscribe to Into Your Head Shorts on YouTube. There'll be, I promise, there'll be nothing like that in there. Unless this segment makes it into an Into Your Head Short. I don't think it will. I don't think it may not even make it into the actual podcast. Especially that bit about the press conference. I think I'm going to delete that. So there we go. And the man behind the bar says, certainly, a pack of my finest cigarettes, young cat. Wait a minute, did we not do a thing last year when you asked for cigarettes and I said no? And the cat said, yes, we're doing this now for balance, where I asked for cigarettes and there's no problem at all, for balance, as we're a balanced podcast. And the man behind the bar says, oh, okay, I suppose. What brand of cigarettes would you like, young cat? And the cat says, excuse me, I'm a cat. I'm not affected by brands. Just give me the one with the tobacco that tastes nice. And the man behind the bar says, certainly, here's one. Rothmans tastes nice. And the cat says, cigars, please. Give me a pack of 20 cigars. And the man behind the bar says, oh, I'm afraid cigars don't come in packs of 20 like that. At least not in places like this. Oh, not in the hell holes like this. Not in some hell hole like this. And the cat says, okay, well, my former owner, the late Pope Benedict Emeritus the 15th, or is it 16th? I'm not sure. He was into cigarettes. He didn't smoke. He was just an admirer of them from afar. He admired the branding and the... Because there's a lot of work goes into branding cigarettes nowadays, especially in jurisdictions like this where you're barely allowed to market them at all. You have to make sure that the statutorily required photo of a chest full of cancer, you have to make sure it's there, it's the law. So you have to do that, and then you have to choose a font for your government health warning that you put on top of that. That takes a lot of effort. You have to find some way as a marketing expert. No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why I even started this. I don't know why I even started this. Just give me a pint of fucking Guinness. And the man behind the bar says, certainly, sir, a pint of your finest Guinness coming right up
into your head.
There was a time when you'd buy a house and it came with a garage. And it was great. You buy a house with a garage, and he said, this is great, I'm going to convert this into an extra sitting room. I lived in an estate as a child where every house was built with a garage, and every house converted their garage into an extra room. It's like magicking up an extra room in the house that's already there. It's like if you get a computer with memory extension slots. That's the way houses were for a while in the 70s and 80s anyway. Nobody wanted the garage because they realized cars, you can keep a car outside, it's fine. You live in your car for a while, then you finally get the means to get a house and you find the house doesn't have anywhere to insert your car into. Well, that's because your car isn't really a module that you insert into your house. And neither is your, oh wait, your garage is, wait a minute now though. This analogy, you have the house, and there's kind of a slot in the front of it into which you can insert a new extra sitting room. But before you insert anything into this slot, it's a garage. So you don't have to insert a garage module into it. The garage module is already there. There's a garage. A garage is just an empty space inside a house where they don't really build the inside of a room. There's an empty space. They don't put plaster on the walls, they don't put flooring in, but still, effectively, it's a slot. You can slot a room into that. But if you want the garage for that house, you don't have to go and get a garage module and slot it in. You can just use the empty space as your garage module, and you don't have to slot a garage room into that at all. Am I explaining it properly? I'm probably not. Am I going to try it again? I want to try and stop myself. Last week I came up with a new way to build houses whereby instead of using whatever they stick bricks together with, you'd string the concrete blocks together with ropes, and for some reason I thought that was a good idea. It took me about 20 minutes to explain it in any way coherently, and it took me about an hour to edit that segment so it made any sense. It makes sense. So I'm reluctant to go down that road again with this garage module thing. I'll give her one more shot anyway. You have these houses like you used to buy in housing estates in the 70s and 80s. And there'd be a slot in the front that was designated as a garage. But eventually everyone would just convert that into an extra living room or playroom or something.
before you convert us, you have what I think of as a slot for a module that you might put in. You might get a sitting room module, a repair room module, or an extra downstairs bedroom module. But if you just use it as a garage, you don't have to get a garage module, even though there's nothing really built in that slot. It's just an empty slot. You can just drive the car straight into that. It usually has a normal garage door on it already. And that's all you need for a garage. You don't have to slot in an extra room. You don't have a garage at all. You just have a slot that you put your car into. If you bought a house that wasn't decorated or plastered or anything, it was half finished, arguably you could use any room in that house as your garage if it was bare bones enough. But no house is sold like that. They don't build houses like that. Except for the garage, every room is somewhat a room. It already has somewhat of a module installed or built inside it. And that's the thing about the airships as well. These airships that I was going on about in an earlier segment, it's not just a balloon. You have modules inside that. You have a module inside a balloon that I presume is a load of rooms, bedrooms and restaurants and lounges and wherever the pilot sits. Those are all part of a module that gets put inside the balloon known as an airship. So that's connected that up. You've gone full circle now. So that's great. That's great. Well done me. Then of course you have attic rooms. Now this wasn't as common as garages, but the house we had in the 80s, in that estate where all the houses were built with garages, when we got that house, our garage had already been converted into an extra living room, so it had a living room module installed. But there was also above that a thing called an attic room. This was a new concept to me at the time as a child. I'd never come across this before. It wasn't in the attic. There was a two-story house and it had an attic above the upstairs floor. But they had a thing called an attic room as well, where you'd normally expect a rectangular cuboid room. You had a wedge-shaped or a thing. So really, the module you'd install there would be extra airspace. And the airspace is there already on the outside of that sloped roof. You have to bring that inside by enveloping that into the house. You had to build a dormer window. The dormer window was about getting enough headspace so you don't bang your fucking head off everything. My dad sellotaped to the ceiling the sign saying, "Mind your effing head. You've only got one left." He installed this, I presume, after he had at least one injury. So I presume he lost one head in this injury. He didn't tell me about this. I was a child, between 6.5 and 9.5 years old. So I presume he thought, I'm not going to tell him about this. He's too young to know about this. I've never asked my older brothers, were they informed when he lost his first head, apparently, or his second last head? I don't know how many he had in total. So how did he lose his head? Does it just fall off and grow back? I don't know. So obviously that's not what happened. I know I'm not stupid. I know that's not what happened. But thinking in terms of my 8 or 9 year old self, I wasn't very worldly in those days. If he had told me that he had lost his head and a new one had grown back, I would have believed that, and I think I'd have been quite satisfied with that. And I think I'd have felt good about that, in fact, because I would know, even if something happens to one of your parents, something catastrophic, like they get their head knocked off after accidentally walking into that terrifying room upstairs, it grows back. And I think it would have been good to know, even if it was complete bollocks, because the evidence would have been that it was true, because he was alive and well after that for several years. Well, 4 or 5 more years after that. When do you lose your childhood teeth and grow your new pair? I would have known by then, but your teeth grow back. When you lose teeth, they grow back. So it would have been quite easy to convince me that when you lose your head, a new one grows. Maybe he didn't want me to know that because he thought I wouldn't be careful enough then. Because I remember I learned how to ride a bicycle in the back garden of that house. And it took quite some time to get the hang of it. I kept falling. So he probably thought, no, I don't want him to become too lackadaisical. regarding injuries like that. I don't want him to think, oh, no, it's fine. Don't have to worry too much about my head, because if I damage it, I can just grow a new one. He probably thought, I don't want him to know that he can just grow a new one, because in order for a new one to grow, you have to have sufficiently extensive injuries to your original head. If you just partially injure your original head, you're not going to grow a new one, because the old one won't fall off, it'll still be there. That's the problem. You partially damage your head, say you have some accident, but it's not completely catastrophic, so your head doesn't completely fall off, it's just damaged. Your body won't know to just grow a new head and then let the old one fall off gradually, like a wart, after the new one is ready to use. So I suppose he thought, no, I know he's a careful kid, but I don't want him to be... But I don't know what he was afraid of. I don't know. Another thing I remember about that back garden, I was learning to ride a bicycle. We had a very long back garden, so I'd go up and down the back garden on this bicycle, trying to get the hang of keeping my feet off the ground, while also keeping the rest of my body off the ground and staying vertical. I was trying to figure that out. One day I was walking along the garden path to get my bicycle from the shed, probably. And there was some sort of insect, a giant worm or giant beetle or something on the garden path. Now, please don't judge me for what I'm about to tell you here. I was 7 or 8 or 9 years of age. I decided one day to just stamp on one of these insects, just out of curiosity or boredom or something. And the stain that was left by that beetle or whatever it was, giant worm, perhaps, or something, I'm not sure what. The stain was there for many months after. There was still a stain there for a long time after. I never pointed it out to anyone. I never said to my parents, look, that's the murder I committed there. There's still evidence there. And that's a bit like the nuclear bomb in Hiroshima and the other place. There were people who just got vaporized. There was kind of a little stain, a little shadow of them left on the wall somewhere. You hear about that occasionally. It's a bit like that. That's interesting to note, isn't it? Yeah, I'd like to clarify by garden shed. I don't mean a greenhouse. A greenhouse, I know you think a greenhouse is a shed in which you grow stuff, so it's the garden inside a shed. No, that's not what a garden shed is. That's what a greenhouse is. I'm not talking about a greenhouse. A garden shed is an oasis of, it's kind of an outhouse of sorts, in your garden, but it's not part of your house. A garage can be part of your house, but a shed cannot, as far as I'm concerned. A shed is a separate thing, and you put it at least halfway down the back garden. So if you're outdoors, if you're going out, you're spending a day out in your back garden, you don't feel like going back up to the house every time you want to do anything. You have your shed there as kind of an outhouse of sorts. It's a bit like if you had the same childhood as me. Every time we went to the beach for the day, we go to wherever we had our beach house. Obviously, like most families, we owned a beach house in a prominent location, close to the top of the beach, between there and wherever you parked your car for the day. You'd own your beach house there. Well, usually be quite a modest thing. Now, this is Ireland. We didn't have a lot of very hot weather. But it'd be 2 or 3 days every summer where you go spend a day at the seaside. And that's where we'd visit our beach house. We'd spend the day there. Well, we'd spend most of the day sitting on the blanket on the actual beach. Because the beach house isn't close enough for all that. You want to have a base. Your parents set up base on the beach, sitting on the blanket with the picnic at the ready, and they watch you as you go running up and down to the shoreline and going in for a swim or going in to paddle or playing with the other kids or building sandcastles. So they supervise you from there. They can't really supervise you sufficiently from the beach house. It's not really on the beach at all. It's just off the beach. It's overlooking it. Well, it's not far up there. The lifeguards have these fancy huts. They're usually on the beach. If the beach house was on the beach, that might be useful. But no, it wasn't. It was just off it. But eventually, we sold the beach house. It got turned into a 20-room hotel. I think it's still there. I don't even remember where it was now. Did we have more than one? No. And no, we didn't. Obviously not. Obviously, this is a lie. We didn't own a beach house. That's fucking ridiculous. People don't own beach houses. Not in my world, anyway. You didn't need to. I've told you many times, including, I believe, on the previous episode, I've told you. We lived... Actually, oh, wait a minute, though. We did have a beach house in real life. We lived on Bray Head for several years. We lived in a house on Bray Head, about a fifth of the way up Bray Head, a well-known seaside mountain in the seaside town of Bray. We lived there for many years, directly overlooking the beach. You could look out every window at the back of that house. You'd be looking down from overhead, about a quarter of a mile over the esplanade and the beach. You could see the whole mile-long esplanade and beach. So suppose that counts as a beach house. But it doesn't really, because you live there. If you went to the beach from there, if you were so young that you needed to be supervised by your parents, which we weren't, but if we did, you couldn't say, if a policeman came along and said, oh, hello, where are your parents? He couldn't point up at Bray Head. I know our parents are here. They're supervising us. They're having a picnic up there in their kitchen up there. Look, if you're on Bray Beach, at least at the south end, you could point up at the mountain and say, yes, Garda. If you look up at that blob of houses up on the hill, maybe 200 yards up off the ground from the south end of this mile-long promenade, you can see there's 50 or 60 houses up there. Now, if you look carefully, you can see there's four main rows. The third row up is actually all one road. But if you look at the second row of houses from the top, you look at that and then look for where the bend seems to be and count along about five houses from there. And if you look there, then you should be able to see our kitchen window. That's what we'd say to the guard. And the guard would, of course, say, what in the name of Christ? That's nowhere near here. Your parents are at home in your house. That's at least 20 minutes walk from here. Maybe slightly less, because from there to here, they're going downhill because they're coming down the mountain. But no, they're not supervising you. It'll be ridiculous. And of course, I'd have to say to that, oh, you've got a point there. But I think they felt the fact that I'm a teenager means I don't need to be supervised. And of course the guard would say to that, he'd say, oh, you're absolutely right, young man. That's very true, very true. Only problem is I've just caught you committing an act of murder here. You've just stood on an insect on the beach. And of course I'd say to that, wait a minute though, officer, or whatever. I keep saying officer because I'm trying to be considerate towards you foreigners. Most of the people listening to this are abroad. You don't know the term Garda. I barely know the term Garda. I don't go around saying Garda, 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 because I don't have a lot of run-ins with the police. You have a point there, officer, except you don't. Because if I were to commit murder on this beach, for example, by standing on and thereby effectively vaporizing a beetle or a big worm, a big juicy worm that if you stood on, you'd expect it to leave a stain. If you did that on the beach, it wouldn't be as satisfying as doing it on the concrete path at home, because you're on soft sand, and it mightn't even kill it. You'd just be pushing it into the gaps between the sand. It would have a good chance of survival. It could put up a fair fight. And by fair, I know you're thinking, how is it a fair fight? That's a beetle or a worm or something. And I'm a human being who's about 4,000 times its size. But no, I have a handicap in that. If that worm attacked me, I would not be able to just disappear between the grains of sand with a hope to escaping being squashed by his foot. Where the worm can do that, has a chance of doing that anyway. Unless it happens to be on a particularly flat and firm piece of beach, where, I don't know, maybe someone's concreted the sand or something. I wonder, can the beach be naturally and inadvertently turned to concrete? Maybe it can. I don't know if you ever built a concrete path or a mixed concrete. There's three basic components. There's water, and there's cement, and there's sand. Now, if you have a beach on a wet day, you don't have cement, but you have sand and you have water. So that's two of the three components. So surely there's a chance that could inadvertently turn to concrete. Wouldn't be the normal recipe for concrete because you're missing one item. But we've all done a lot of cooking at home where we've been missing one ingredient and it's turned out perfectly okay. So it wouldn't be too surprising if there were beaches that overnight, inadvertently, the whole beach turned to concrete. Everyone woke up and suddenly there was wet concrete path there. Probably not very level, but still. I think all it would take would be for there to be some sort of contaminant in the rainwater or the seawater to happen to have a similar effect to whatever's in the cement that he used normally to mix with water and sand to make concrete. I'm surprised that doesn't happen a lot. Maybe it does and we don't know about it. Why would we not know about it? Surely we'd know about it. People know us if a whole foot, especially in that town, people would have noticed it. That town has a mile long beach. And it's not a sandy beach, it's a stony beach, but it's a big feature. And it's well known. But I think people would know us.